This year is being dedicated to Lilui Nishmat Moshe ben Mordechai Halevi. In talking about Purim, there is a very famous Gemara, which is often quoted in connection to Purim, wherein three of the major characters of Purim, the question the Gemara asks in Chulin is to where are they hinted at in the Torah? Haman mina Torah minayin, where's Haman hinted at? Mordechai mina Torah minayin, where's Mordechai hinted at? Esther mina Torah minayin, where's Esther hinted at? And the Gemara answers by quoting different psukim. And the psukim are very indicative of what Purim is about and gives us a sense of the depth of the holiday. What I'd like for us to do tonight is to examine the Gemara in its entirety. One of the things that's so unfair is to take a concept and just quote here and there, it's, I guess what I do all the time, but and not to see the whole spectrum, the whole Gemara. Because the Gemara in its entirety gives us a deeper sense of what these individuals are about and the psukim quoted and what Purim is all about. So the first and foremost I'd like to do is to learn through the Gemara together and raise a number of questions on the Gemara and then try to look at the Gemara on two levels to gain somewhat of an insight into the essence of what Purim is about, Purim being the holiest day of the Jewish calendar year. There are many essences. We'll try to tap in on two of them in Mirtzat Hashem today. The second megama, the second goal, is to try to understand a little bit more deeply what Mishloach Manos is about, when we send at least two gifts to one friend, and the Mechaber tells us, Shulchan Aruch tells us, V'chalamar be'reis ha'meshubach, the more you send, the more praiseworthy it is. Obviously, as the Rambam tells us, spend more money on Matanos Avyonim than Mishloach Manos, which means that you shouldn't have these Mishlochei Mano, which is, you know, the talk of the town, but do it with simplicity, do it with beauty, and, you know, in such a way, in a sneistic way, that you're not spending an abundant amount of money, but send to your friends, send to as many people as possible. And we know, just parenthetically, the Mishloach Manos to be Yotzei, at least one of them, has to be food for the Suda, food for the meal itself, right? So to have all your Mishlochei Manot, milk and chocolate bars, when the Suda is usually fleishich, you're really not Yotzei Yochiyu. That's why if you go to a friend for Suda, and you bring a salad and a kugel, and you say, this is my Mishlochei Manot, that's the best way, really, to be Yotzei. Okay. But I'd like to try to understand symbolically, philosophically, what makes Purim unique in that we send Davka Mishloach Manos on Purim. Those are our focus as well as what we can glean and learn from Purim in general. Let's see the entire Gemara. It's in Gemara in Chulin, Daf Kuf, Lametet, Amud Beis. Most of the Gemara is photocopied here. At the end, we'll just say outside. It was just an oversight that it's not here. The Gemara cites an inquiry. The Papians used to say to Rav Manasseh, Matzah kan birosho shel adam mahu. If one found a bird's nest on the head of a person, what is the law? Because it's only when you have a bird's nest that's connected to the ground do you do the mitzvah of Kan Tzipor. And if it's up in the heavens, you don't do it. So where is a bird's nest if it's found on the head of a person? So he answers, v'adamal rosho. The verse says, and the earth was on his head, which means that the bird's nest, if it's found on a person's head, you know, we know these people that have these, I don't know, haircuts like you think a bird could find its way, its nest in there. All right, use your imagination. It is chayev in shiluach hakan, in sending away the bird's nest. Then they ask further, where in the Torah, prior to Moshe Rabbeinu's birth, Moshe min haTorah minayin is an allusion to the arrival of Moshe Rabbeinu, which is appropriate to learn about today, Zayin Adar, which is the day of the birth and the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Gemara answers, B'shagam hu basar. The pasuk is in Parshat Noach, inasmuch B'shagam as he is mere flesh. And the end of the pasuk is that that man lives 120 years, Moshe Rabbeinu also lived 120 years. Then the Gemara asks, Haman min haTorah minayin? Where is there an allusion to the episode of Haman? And the Gemara answers, Hamina eitz. Have you, Hamin, eaten from the tree from which I commanded you not to eat. So Hamin is the same letters as Haman with different vocalization. From this tree did you eat? Hamin. This is an allusion to Haman. Another inquiry. Esther mina Torah minayin. Where's Esther alluded to in the Torah? And he answers from the Pasuk, Vanochi hastir astir, and I will surely hide my face, my countenance from them. And then the Gemara ends, Mordechai mina Torah minayin. Where is Mordechai found in the Torah? And he quotes the Pasuk by the Besamim, Mor Dror, that one of the spices in the Ketoret was a spice called Mor Dror, where the Aramaic translation is Maryad Dichya, which is, if you put those two words together, it's Mordechai. So obviously, there are quite a number of questions on this Gemara. We're only going to deal with a number. First of all, what is the connection between all of these? I can understand the connection between Haman, Mordechai, and Esther. But how does Moshe Rabbeinu and a bird's nest fit into this group? It seems very bizarre. And what does it mean? Where is Moshe Rabbeinu found in the Torah? Moshe Rabbeinu is found everywhere in the Torah. And what's his allusion to Bishagamu Basar? It seems so, you know, random. How are we to understand what the Gemara is getting at here? These are the questions that we need to understand. And obviously, which is very important for us, is what is the meaning that Haman is found from the word Hamin Ha'etz, from the tree of the tree of knowledge, that Esther is found from the fact that God Hastir Astir, a play on Esther, will conceal his face, and that Mordechai is found in some Aramaic translation of the Ketoret of the spice in the incense offering. What are all these allusions about? How do they play a role in our understanding of Purim? So here, my friends, I'd like to look at this Gemara on two levels, and the learning we're going to do, I think, is very exciting and very nogea, very lemaisa to our lives. The first approach I'd like to take is really based primarily, almost in its entirety, and we'll just add here and there, on an essay by Rav Moshe Breslover and a sefer we've used before, L'machar Atir. The essay happens to be found in Parsha Noach on the Pasuk B'Shagam U'Basar. And he prefaces the understanding of this Gemara with the following. We now are dealing with, so we're going to fit in Moshe Rabbeinu and the Parsha Shavuot, we're going to get everything in, my friend. We're dealing now with these weeks, Truma Tetzavet, Kitisa Vayaka Pekudei, with the Mishkan. And we know in Source 3, the Mishkan is Habayit HaChitzon, it's the outer structure, wherein the Aron, the Ark, is the Libo Shel HaMishkan, is really the heart of the Mishkan. And the obvious question that we have to ask ourselves is, how is it possible for the Shekhinah, for the Divine Presence, which is, you know, all-encompassing in the entire world, to reside in such a small structure? And he notes that the reality of the Mishkan answers the question for us, how the Mishkan was built. He says, both by the Mishkan and the Aron, the second paragraph in 3, Mavchin Shishneim Asuyim Lefi Oto Ikaro, have as the same principle in how they are built. The Mishkan is built with boards on both sides, and Yiriot Milamala, and goat skins covering its top. And we understand that then they were covered, Atzei Shittim were covered with layers of gold, as well as in the Mishkan, the Aron, it too had a layer of gold inside and outside, as well as the Riota Mishkan, the coverings of the Mishkan, the major covering was a goat skin. And on top of that, because of Zekeliv Anveyu to beautify the Mishkan, some more beautiful coverings were made of Trelet, Argaman, of different turquoise, wool, etc. But the essence of the Mishkan is, the essence of the Aron is the wood. Yes, there's gold layering on the inner and outer, but the essence is the wood. The essence of the covering of the Mishkan are the Uriotizin, the goat skin. Yes, they were more beautiful on top, but if you have to get down to what is that which makes it function, that which is the essence, as he says at the end of 5,
V'day v'alilamdenu shedavka b'yriyota pshutot nirmaz haikar. The simple ones are the essence. Because l'fisha pashut hu adavar ha'ikari, where the arrow is, that which is simple is the essence. Ha'nitzrach l'ashrayat ha'shchina. V'apair hino ha'tafel. V'ino ela ha'shlama l'ikar. The beauty is secondary. How can Hashem dwell amongst us? Hashem enjoys, he likes to dwell among the simple. Why was Har Sinai chosen of all the mountains? Because it was the lowest, it was the simplest of all the mountains. The beauty of the Mishkan, yes, it had physical beauty to it. And yes, there's something to be said about beautifying something. But if you want to know what the essence is the pashtus, the simplicity. And we need to understand, in looking at the Mishkan, that really what was the heartbeat of the Mishkan was the simplicity that was found in it. Now, just as we are commanded to build the physical structure of a Mishkan, the simplicity being the core, and then the outer layers of beauty, likewise we know there's a tzivui, a vasuli mikdash v'shachanti v'tocham, to make a sanctuary that God can dwell among them. And the Alshech HaKadosh points out that it is v'tocham, that God can dwell among us. And the Torah tells us, v'chein ta'asu, this is what you should do. Continuing in 7, Rashi says, l'doros, for generation. Because even when the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, we have an obligation at all times to build within ourselves a Mishkan Shebalev, to build within ourselves a model of a sanctuary wherein God can reside among us. And this sanctuary that God can reside within us was also shown to Moshe Rabbeinu, not only the outer physical sanctuary, but the inner one as well. Source number 8. V'nirasha tshuva l'sheila zu. Where is the inner sanctuary shown to Moshe Rabbeinu? It's found in the pasuk. Kechol asher ani mareh otcha. All that I show you. If you want to be medayik in the pasuk, it really should not use the word otcha, but should use the word lecha. You, that I show you. Otcha is the connotation that you are the model. You, Moshe Rabbeinu, are the model of what it means to have the Tavnit HaMishkan, to have the Mishkan as a model of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You, Moshe Rabbeinu, are the conduit that the Shechina spoke from your mouth, from your throat, just like the Shechina, the Divine Presence, spoke among the Kruvim. That's the model of Moshe Rabbeinu. You want to know, and again, it's so appropriate for Moshe Rabbeinu's Yortzeit, you want to know what it means to be a Mishkan? Look at Moshe Rabbeinu. Be inspired by Moshe Rabbeinu. He is our model of what it means to be able to be a Mishkan. Ah, but then you say to yourself in Source 9, but I'm going to be a Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the greatest of all people, Mi yachol in 11, b'chlau lachshov lagil dargazu, Moshe Rabbeinu alav shalom. Who would ever think to reach this level? He's referred to v'yishlach malach v'yotzeinu mitzrayim. Malach ze Moshe, he spoke to Hashem. He refused to nurse from an Egyptian woman. I can never be a Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore comes along the Gemara in Chulin that we began with. And the Gemara says no. Where is Moshe hinted at in the Torah? B'shegam hu basar. B'shegam, Rashi tells us in Gematria, it's Moshe Rabbeinu. That Moshe Rabbeinu is basar. He is a Yelud Isha. He was born of a mother, a woman, right? He is somebody who came from very physical. He used the Torah. He used spirituality to grow, to become who he became. But you want to know the essence of Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe min haTorah minayin mi? From where is Moshe Rabbeinu getting his greatness from? How are we supposed to emulate Moshe Rabbeinu? And the answer is b'shagam u'basar. Moshe Rabbeinu starts off like you and me. He starts off like a regular person, but he grows. He develops, he takes the inspiration of Torah and working on his mitos to become who he becomes. And this is the idea of Adam in 13, Rashei Tevot Afar Dam Mara. It's the blood, it's the ashes, it's nothing. Basar is Rashei Tevot, Busha, Srucha, Rima, we're flesh, where worms will eat us. Moshe Rabbeinu, as great as he was, always remained in anav. Always remained bishagam hu basar. He always remained a human being. Even when he became an ish alokim, he was still an ish, still a person. And this is the model of what the Mishkan is about. Yes, there's gold on the outside. Yes, there's great godliness. But what is on the inside was the goat skins, was the wood. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu is about. On the inside is basar, it's flesh, desires like we have, and temptations like we have, and human being on the inside. And that is what we have to beautify, but never forgetting our frailty, never forgetting from where we come from. And this then explains the Gemara of the bird's nest in 15. When the Gemara is asking, if you find a bird's nest on a person, what's the answer? Is it like his head is in heaven? Is it like he is Elyon Shvamami, as if he is godly? And the answer is no. Adama Rosho. A person is always connected to the ground. A person, as the godless of a person, is always to have shiflus. It's always to have humility. And that is now the connection in the Gemara. When the Gemara speaks about that, if you find a bird's nest, we don't, on a person's head, we don't consider it that a person is godly. Yes, they have a godly element, but we consider it as Adamal Rosho, that they're connected to the ground. The biggest proof of this is the next part of the Gemara, Moshe min haTorah minayin, the star in 15. Al Adam liskor tamid shenosar me'adama. We always have to remember from where we come from. And as long as he's connected to his body, he is full of dam, he is full of lowly. The Zehare Gamma Musaras Kalmashelashnia Moshe Mina Torah Minayin. And this is what Moshe Rabbeinu is about. With this in mind, that what the Gemara is talking about is that even when you are great, you're still a person. And humility is what counts. The inner goat skins, the inner box of the Aron. It's that simple simplicity which matters. It's the Adama, it's the Adam. It's recognizing our flesh and blood and never forgetting this. That's the core. With this, we can now explain the theme of the next three statements of the Gemara about Haman, Mordechai, and Esther. When the Gemara asked in 16, Haman min haTorah minayin, the Gemara is asking, how did Haman reach the level that he reached? And the answer is, Hamina Eitz. He reached it from the same sin of the Chet Achilas Adam Arishon Eitz Hadaat, from the same way that Adam fell in eating of the tree. What was the problem of Adam? Third line in 16, Mikoach HaGaiva. It was from an Adam Arishon's level, haughtiness. Vashaifa, and the desire, like as the Torah tells us, to live yitem kelokin, you'll be godlike. And that was Haman's desire. Haman wanted everyone to bow down to him. Haman wanted to be a god. And this is the core of Haman. Where is Haman from? Hamin ha'eitz. Haman is from that tree. The desire to eat from that tree is a desire, the Nachash says, that you'll be godlike. You'll be like God. You'll know everything. You'll be on top of the world. That is the core, that gaiva, the antithesis of Moshe Rabbeinu, is the core of Haman. And it was this level of gaiva that Haman, who made the tree 50 cubits high, was trying to get Mordechai to fall. He knew that how do you get a Jew to trip up? It's v'ram levavcha v'shachachta. It's when you have haughtiness and you forget God. This is what Haman was desiring in making that tree. What he was trying to do on a deeper level was trying to make Mordechai an individual who was, so to speak, going to live up to that tree and feel full of himself spiritually. And this explains in 17, Mordechai lo nafal bepach shenitman l'raglav. Mordechai didn't fall into this hole. Mordechai mina Torah minayin in 17. What's the koach that Mordechai had that he was able to withstand Haman? And the answer is mar dror. Dimitar geminan mira dachya. How do you find Mordechai hinted at in this pasuk? So it's very interesting. More dror, more memresh, which is a spice, if you switch it around, is the same letters as ram. Ram means elevated, high, haughty. And it's the same numerical value as Amalek. More dror literally means freedom, right? So more dror means that Mordechai understood how he had to be freed from the Moor, from the Ram, from Amalek. That is the essence of what Mordechai is about, that he was freeing himself. And that is why when Esther sends him clothes, when he's sitting in sackcloth on the ground, Mordechai refuses to take these clothes because he says, I need to free myself from the mindset of thinking I'm a higher person than I am. Wearing these sackcloth is a constant reminder. I'm never taking my mind off that I belong on the ground in a lowly way. You want to know the way to counterbalance the aspect of Amalek the Ram? It's only by being the Shofel, by being the humble one. I'll just add parenthetically in 18 that the Pasuk speaks about we'll leave that as this. And this is as well the end of 18, what Esther mina Torah minayin. Esther is from Hester, from concealment. Hakol b'tznius u'behester. Esther doesn't tell where she comes from. She doesn't look at herself as a queen. She doesn't ask for things like the other woman asked for. She has the koach of recognizing, of listening to others. That's the idea of Hester, Astir. She knows how to conceal herself. She knows how to be betznius. And that is the essence of Mordechai, the essence of Esther, the counterbalance to Amalek, which is Gaiva. The Shvilei Pinchas, Rav Pinchas Friedman, again, from Bells, points out in a wonderful essay that this is the war of Purim. It's the war of Gaiva, the war of pride, versus the war of humility. Now you see this in source number 20, when Achashverosh says to Haman, that fateful morning when Achashverosh, middle of the night, can't sleep, and Haman happens to be in the courtyard and he comes in, and Achashverosh says, I want to honor somebody. What would you do to honor somebody? And what does Haman say to himself? Who would the king want to honor more than me? That's his mindset. It's a mindset that you are the greatest, that there's nobody else greater than yourself. This is the war of the Gaiva. This is the war of Mordechai and Esther. And that's why when the Navi says An Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan HaDbirah, 22. The Medrash in Esther Rabbah says, Ish, a man, Melamed Shaya Mordechai Shakul B'Doro, K'Moshe B'Doro. Mordechai was like, equal to Moshe in his generation. What does it say about Moshe? Va'ish Moshe Anav Ma'od. And Moshe was very humble. And Moshe Rabbeinu was able with that mead of humility to fight Amalek. Likewise, this Va'ish Mordechai has that same quality of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Ish of Anivus, of modesty, that he has the ability to fight with Amalek as well. He notes, which is something to think about in Source 23, that we know that the way the calendar system works itself out, that certain holidays can fall on certain times of the year, certain days of the week, and certain holidays can't. Like Lo Adu Rosh, Rosh Hashanah can't come out first day on a Sunday, Wednesday, and a Friday, right? Lo Badu Pesach, there's a number one of these. So when you look at Purim, it's very interesting that the first day of Purim will only fall out on a Sunday, on a Wednesday, on a Thursday, and on a Friday. It won't fall out the first day on a Shabbos. It won't fall out the first day on a Tuesday. It will only fall out on these days, 4 out of the 7 days. Why? So these days, in the asterisks in 23, these days, Gimel Aleph Vav Hey, spell out Gaiva, pride. Because the days where Purim comes out, the letters of those days of the week spell out Gaiva, pride, to teach us that Purim is about being Mevatel Klipas HaGaiva. What is the war of Purim? When Purim comes out this year, let's say on Yom Aleph, on a Sunday, we're talking about outside Yerushalayim, the unwalled cities. It means that our battle is battling the Aleph and Gaiva. The battle of Purim is fighting this aspect of Gaiva. Any notes here for those who like hints? Vehaman nofel al hamita, mixing up the first letters, is anava. What allows Haman to fall on the bed that Esther's on? It's the anivus, it's the modesty of Esther Hamalka. And that's why Purim is a time of Kabbalah Satorah, because Kabbalah Satorah is given to those who are humble, and that's why there's a big inyan of drinking on Purim. Obviously, and the more I learn, the more I see, this inyan of drinking is not to get drunk in an intoxicated way like we see. It means to feel happy. It means to go above and beyond your normal inhibitions. It does not mean to be stone drunk. And there's a responsibility of every parent to really teach and instruct and watch over their children that they behave like mensches. And it doesn't mean, and when it says wine, it means wine. It doesn't mean hard liquor. It doesn't mean things that, you know, make them pass out. Okay. What is unique about wine? Wine is kept in earthenware vessels. It's kept in things of simplicity, because that's the essence of what Purim is about. The war of Amalek is Ram, is haughtiness, is Gaiva. Let's make a tree 50 amos high. And Mordechai is about the simplicity. And that is why it's very interesting that if you take a look throughout the Megillah, and now that we're clued into it, we'll see it jumping out at us over and over again on the next page in 28 and 29. Where is Mordechai found throughout the Megillah over and over again? He is sitting Bishar HaMelech, at the gates of the king. And the Melech, we know, is what's the reference to Malchus Shalom, to Hashem. Mordechai doesn't feel he's worthy to enter into the palace of the king. He's sitting Bishar HaMelech at the gates of the king. The gates, the Shar HaMelech, is the epitome of humility. That's where Mordechai is. That's what Mordechai stands for. That's the war. And that's the idea in 29. Vayika Haman et levush v'tasus. And Haman takes the clothing and he puts it on Mordechai. Klomar kacha yasel isha yesh bo mina savnava kamordechai. The melech ha'olyon, God, the ultimate melech. Who is he chafetz bikaro? Upon whom is he misharei alav shchinato? Upon whom does he put his shchina? Those who are machnia et themselves. That's the deeper understanding of when Haman goes around saying, kacha yasel ish, asher melech chafetz bikaro. This is what is done to a person whom the king desires. The deeper understanding is, right? Who does the king, the Malkol Shalolam, the ultimate king with a capital K, desire? Desires a person like Mordechai, who's always b'shiflus. And even after Mordechai is raised up on the horse and he's wearing all these beautiful clothes, where does Mordechai return to? That's right, Shar HaMelech, because he never leaves that position of knowing his place. As long as the war of Amalek is going on, it's going to be a war of gaiva, of haughtiness versus anivus versus humility and modesty. And it's this chus, as we mentioned, again, it's not really, it's a mistake. It's not chazon l'moed 31, 32, 33, 34, the machara atir. This is what the misped and the avel, the tsom, the bechi, the crying, the lamentations, is what makes them ra'ui to receive the Torah once again. Because this, like Har Sinai, what Hashem desires so much, is not thinking you know everything, but knowing your place, and in that way being able to receive the Torah. If I could just add one final idea on this level before moving to the second. So the question you may ask yourselves, okay, this is a very beautiful idea, and I think it is a beautiful idea, and I think it explains the Gemara very well, that the whole Gemara is talking about, if you have a bird's nest on somebody's head, is a person considered heavenly or earthly? And the answer is earthly. Because a person has to be like a Moshe Rabbeinu, always remembering their anivus, always remembering where they come from. A person can never get carried away. Haman gets carried away. He's like the tree, the gaiva, the haughtiness. Mordechai and Esther represent the more drawer, the freedom from the ram, the freedom from the haughtiness. Esther, knowing how to conceal herself, modesty, the shara mela, that's the theme of Purim. So the question you may ask, which is a question I ask myself, is practically how does this manifest in our observance of Purim? And I think there are many answers, but the one that I'd like to suggest is an insight that the Tiva Moadim of Gamliel Rabinowitz points out in regard to Mishloach Manos. And he notes that what's unusual about Mishloach Manos, he says, "V'afki chalukim heima ma'od b'dargoteim," even though people can be on different social strata, "Zeh ashir v'zeh ani," this one can be poor, this one rich, "Zeh ish nechbad v'zeh ish nikle," this could be an honorable person, this could be a simple person, and obviously there are many other categories, but here, "Kol Yisrael mamash b'chlal re'eyu shekol echad ve'echad." Here on Purim we find that Purim is a great equalizer, that the richest person can be sending Mishloach Manot to the simplest person in town, and vice versa. And nobody feels like you're me to send you, that's beneath my dignity, to send you Mishloach Manot. No. In Mishloach Manot, the sense of giving to everybody, poor to rich, rich to poor, because there is no idea of gaiva on Purim. It's not about what you have. On the simplest level, as the Tiva Mardin points out, because you know that nothing stays forever. Haman was the richest person in the world, and Bin Rega was hung and lost everything. And Mordechai, who's sitting in Avel, suddenly becomes, you know, Haman's replacement. So on one level, you understand that whatever we have doesn't last forever. And we also understand that this is a simcha of Purim as well. Because harbe mafrim onim et adam simchato. There are so many things that stop a person from being happy. One of the greatest things is kinna, right? When you see somebody else getting something you don't have. On Purim, it's not about what I have or what they have. Purim is about mishloach manos ish l'reyu, one person to another. I'm just sending it to a friend. I'm sending it to another Jew. And that's the same thing by Matanos Lavyonim. It doesn't matter who they are. And that's the whole idea of dressing up. We all look the same. We're all the same. We don't know who we are. We don't know who's great. We don't know who's simple. We don't recognize anybody. We don't need to recognize anybody because it's not about the social strata. And that's the Kabbalah Satorah of Purim. Ki ish echad, b'lev echad, like the original Kabbalah Satorah, where all the Jews are united. How can we unite once again as all Jews? By being able to come together without this feeling of one person greater than the next. And that is the avoda of Purim. That every person I see, I need to embrace as my Reya, as my friend, as somebody who's Bani Lamakom, who's a child, a son of God, and not suddenly, you know, placing them and pegging them. Where are they on the social strata? It's about anivos. It's about seeing myself in the correct light. It's seeing everyone else in that light and recognizing that we're all here together to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the greatest anivos possible. That's the time, the simcha, the time of receiving the Torah once again. Okay, that's one idea of Purim, to work on this midah of shiflus, of working on the midah of anivos. That's the midah to work on Purim. The second idea I'd like to mention in the time that we have is an idea we've spoken about many times before, but I'd like to now put in context with this Gemara. When we're talking about a bird's nest, so what is the symbol of a bird? So we know Rabbi Feldman, in that classic book on marriage, The River, the Kettle, and the Bird, begins by telling us one who dreams of a river, a kettle, or a bird can look forward to peace. And he speaks about the different levels of relationship of river and a kettle. I want to focus in on the bird. The third and final level of peace is the peace of the bird. A bird has two disparate talents, the ability to survive on earth as well as to fly in the heavens. These talents are not separate skills which exist side by side. Rather, they are details of a single organism which operates in these two realms. The way the bird walks on earth is affected by the way it is designed to fly, and vice versa. A bird therefore represents an embodiment of a piece where two natures and two entities have merged into one unit. The two parties of this sort of piece not only work together, but have merged into one unit. And that's why it's the highest level of marriage, where the piece stems from a deep sense of identity which each marriage partner feels for the other. This idea of total bonding is really the goal of what our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu should be about. The idea of being both here down on earth as well as being up in heaven. And Moshe Rabbeinu is really the embodiment of that. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu is Bishagamu Basar. And the pasuk that's quoted by the bird's nest is Adamal Rosho. Moshe Rabbeinu represents the Adama. He's very much part of the ground, but Adama, we know, Chazal tell us, is also Adam El Elyon, likened to God. Moshe Rabbeinu represents what the bird represents. It represents being connected down here as well as up in Shemayim. The Ish HaElokim. B'shagam hu basar. Yes, Moshe Rabbeinu is very much a basar, but he worked himself up to ultimately be the Ish HaElokim. Purim is about how we can bridge that gap of being able to connect the physical and the spiritual into one. The medium that connects us is the medium called tefillah. In Rav Pinkus' essay, he speaks about that there are two different parts to any mitzvah. There's the maisa mitzvah, there's the action of the mitzvah, and then there's the neshama to the mitzvah. Then there's the soul to the mitzvah. So let's say the maisa of the mitzvah, the physical aspect of the mitzvah, we'll take a look in the third paragraph in 44. He says, in every mitzvah, there are five parts. So let's take Matanos Lavyonim. There's the mitzvah, there's the action, that's part one, to actually give money to an Evyon. There's the dibor, which sometimes is to say the bracha on the mitzvah. Our bracha on the mitzvah is set, being Yotzei the Shechianu and Kriyas Megillah during the day. Some people say it's saying the pasuk of where the mitzvah comes from, that's also the dibor, the speech. The third aspect is the machshava, the thought. I want to fulfill my obligation. The fourth aspect is a ratzon, the desire to fulfill the mitzvah. And the fifth aspect is a simcha. It's a joy that I have the ability to fulfill a mitzvah. Those five aspects should be found. Again, the action, the speech, the thought, the desire, and the joy should be found in every mitzvah we do. Okay, that's an avodah in its own right. Granted. Ulam, ein kol efsharut la'sig et ha'neshama shel Purim. As great as all this is, the neshama of Purim, et tamsit pnimiyoto, you want to know the essence of Purim? It's only through tefillah. B'Purim yesh lipalel l'Hashem yitzbarach ba'ofa miyuchad. On Purim you have to daven to Hashem in a very special way. And he continues by saying the neshama of the neshama, even a deeper aspect of this, is the is to make sure to find time to learn on Purim. So it's not only the physical aspect of Purim, which he says is imperative. You can't spend all Purim davening and learning, because then you're like a shade, right? You have soul without a body. You need to have a body. You need to have the mitzvot. You need to do Mishloach Manos and Suda. You need to do all this. But you can't just have the outer form without the soul. The soul of Purim is davening, and the soul of Purim is taking out time to learn as well. This idea of tefillah, says the Chazon Lamoed, Ramosha Aryeh Leib Shapiro, is hinted at in the introduction to Mordechai. Ish Udi Haya, source 48, B'Shushan Habira, Ushmo Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish. And the Gemara Megillah says ben Yair, that he was mayor in Naam Shay Yisrael b'tfilato. He opened their eyes, he enlightened them with tefillah. Ben Shimi, he heard ben Shishamal tefillato. Ben Kish, that he knocked on the heavenly gates. And the Gemara points out that of all the senses, of seeing, of hearing, of speaking, of smelling, all of them are found in Limud Torah, of learning, except smell. Smell is not connected to Torah, but connected to tefillah. And you find this by Karbanos, Ishei Reach Nicharach Lashem. And that's what it means, Mordechai Mina Torah Minayin. It means, Heichan Ramuz, the arrow in 48, Kochosha Mordechai b'tshuas Purim. Where does Mordechai gain his strength in the story of Purim? And the answer is more drawer. The answer is the ketoret. The answer is the spices. The answer is the koach of tefillah, which was so unique to Mordechai. So if we understand on the second level that the bird, Moshe Rabbeinu, is about connecting heaven and earth, so the Gemara is asking, where do we find in the Purim story? Because Purim is the epitome. It's the holiday that will be around in the future. It is the holiest holiday of the Jewish calendar year. If we start in Nisan, we're building up. Rav Pinkus has a lot of Torah on this, as well as others, the Sefer Shalom and others. We're building up to the grand finale. The grand finale is the last month of the year. Achatz B'Shana, once a year, is Purim. The greatness of Purim is our greatness of Dveikus to Hashem. What the Gemara is saying is, where do we have this idea of being a bird, of yes, being down on the ground, but being able to fly up to the heavens? And the Gemara's answer by Mordechai is more dror. It's the ketoret. It's the incense. It's the smell. Ishei reach. It's the koach of smell, which is the koach of tefillah, which is unique to Mordechai. And likewise, you have by Esther Amalka, her tefillah as well. It's a very interesting grub. You can be ma'ayin yourselves in 52 and 53, how in the end of the Megillah on the Pasuk, Vatosef Esther, and Esther continued, Vatadabil Lifnei Melech, and she continued to talk in front of the king, Vatipol Lifnei Raglav, and she fell in front of his feet, Vatef, she cried, Vatishkanein lo, and she implored him, to dispel the decree of Haman, and his thought. So the Gra goes through each phrase as a different part of tefillah. Vatosef Esther is Psukei Nezimra. Vatidabel Femelech is Kriyat Shema. Vatev is Tfila. Vatakam Esther is Nefila Sapayim, etc. It goes through all of this. It said when Esther's speaking to the king, you think she's only speaking to the king down here? No! Melech throughout the Megillah's Malkos Shalolam. Esther is davening at every step of the way. That's what it's about. Kapitul Kaf Beis, Keli Keli Lama Zavtani. This is the Kalach of Esther. And it's interesting in 54, Lefizem Vuar Ma'od, what's written in the Sefer Kava Yosha, B'Dvar Skulas Tanis Esther B'Yom HaMesugal Tfila. Not only is Purim a time specific to Tfila, but so is Tanin Esther. And anyone who needs major rachaming, he should daven, he should take off time on Tanis Esther. Start with Kapitul Kaf Beis, chapter 22, Ayelot HaShachar. And then use this time to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because both Tanis Esther and Purim are Yemei Ratzon V'Ava. L'chein Tov Litpalel, therefore it's appropriate to daven at these times. And Hashem listens to our tefillah. It's interesting, I got an email this morning from a very holy woman in West Hempstead who've taken it upon themselves to daven, say Tehillim, to divide the book of Tehillim on Purim. And they asked, when's the most appropriate time to daven? So one option really is to get together on a less hectic day called Tanis Esther and to divide up Tehillim, because that too has a tremendous koach of davening. If one wants together on Purim, because we're both, Matov Manai. So any time during the day of Purim has this tremendous skula of davening. We'll talk about specifically the Suda, what it means to daven there in a number of moments. But when there's a day, it's Mesugal Tfila, both Tanis Esther as well as Purim. So our job is not to lose sight of this and to recognize that the key of Purim, the costumes are great. Mishloach Manos is amazing. Matan Slavyonim is incredible. The Mishten Simcha is wow. But don't lose sight of the core of the day. The core of the day is Dveikus to Hashem, is connection to Hashem. And this is what the Nesiv HaShalom points out very clearly in 55, that the Tachlis of all the holidays is Dveikus to Hashem. And this is why in 56, the Keneged HaDveikus Shal Yisrael B'Hashem Yisbarach, and because Purim is about, like the holiday, to connect to Hashem, and because Purim is the greatest of all the holidays, the connection is the greatest, comes along a Malek whose whole job is to cool our relationship with Hashem, to break this Dveikus. And with this, Rabbi Robert's timeless season, we can explain, with this in mind, the connection between the episode of Haman and the verse in Bereishis, Hamina 8, becomes clear. Our rabbis ask, Haman mina Torah minayin, from where did Haman learn his strategy to play on doubt and thereby win over Achashverosh? They reply, from the incident with Chava, who was persuaded to sin after voicing some uncertainty that proved fatal. Perhaps this theme is the basis of the mitzvah of Timchat Zechra Amalek, to blot out Amalek. Nowadays, although the identity of Amalek and his descendants is unknown, nevertheless, the commandment is still valid. And this week is Shabbos Zachar. There's a mitzvah for women as well to hear the Kriyas HaTorah, if at all possible, to remember to blot out a Molech. And the question is, well, we don't have a Molech today. How are we blotting it out? This could be understood by pointing out that a Molech of old, the ancestor of Haman, also only appeared on the scene and harmed the Jewish people when they began to express ideological doubts and ask, is Hashem involved in our lives or not? Immediately afterward, the Torah writes, Vayavo a Molech. The implication is clear. Amalek thrives on uncertainty, and it's not by chance that the numerical value of the word Amalek is the same as Suffolk 240, which means doubt. And Haman followed faithfully in his predecessor's footsteps. If therefore we strengthen our faith in God and fortify our belief in his divine supervision, leaving no room for misgivings, we are keeping Amalek at bay and fulfilling the mitzvah of destroying his influence. Haman min HaTorah minayin, where does Haman come from? He comes from that point of doubt. And that's what Haman is about. Is God among us? Is God not among us? How do we do Mechias Amalek? How do we destroy Amalek? How do we erase Amalek? By strengthening this aspect of doubt and making sure we have certainty that God is with us. And that brings us now to the third part of the Gemara about Esther. The answer to his questions can be found when the Gemara says, Esther mina Torah minayin? They reply with the words, Vanochi astira astira, surely hide my face. The Gemara interprets this response by saying the cardinal purpose of the Megillah is to demonstrate that even in a situation of Hester Pani, when Hashem is hidden from view and appears to be uninvolved, in truth it is He who alone who is organizing and supervising everything that takes place. Even in the Hastira Stir, there's the Anochi, there's the God. The Anochi in divine presence is always in attendance, even at a time of Hester Pani when things look ominous. By reading Megillah and studying the sequence of events, the hardening lesson becomes abundantly clear. And we can now understand why Megillas Esther is called this way. The answer is Megillat Esther is not referring to the person of Queen Esther. It means Gilui Haster, a book that reveals hidden things. Its narrative brings to light the extent of Hashem's influence in our world, known as Helem, out of sight. No, He is not concealed. He only seems to be, and it's our duty to recognize His presence in every event in our lives. The job of Purim is the job of reconnecting us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of breaking down those mechitzos, those barriers that bring a distance between us and Hashem. And that's why it is not by accident. In 65, the Nesiv HaShalom tells us that Yom Kippur is like Purim, Yom HaKippurim, a day like Purim. The difference between Yom Kippur and Purim is Yom Kippur and Purim both break down the barriers between us and Hashem. Yom Kippur is like brick by brick, al chet shechatanu for every sin I've done. Purim is like dynamite. It breaks the wall. It breaks the barrier. Even not doing tshuva, not even focusing in on this, the ava, the love, the simcha, creates this closeness to Hashem. And that is why, while on Yom Kippur, you can daven for any gzeira that shouldn't happen, you can still daven in Yom Kippur because it hasn't been signed and sealed yet. On Purim, you can even daven for something that was signed and sealed. And you can still daven for it to be changed because the barriers, that which create distance between us and Hashem, are wiped away. And it's as if a new petach, a new opening, has been opened on Purim. That's what Purim is about. It's about dveikus. It's about connection. It's about prayer. I was saying to my class this morning, you know, think beforehand of the names of people you want to daven for. Put it on your door. So every time you open your door for Mishloach Manos, say Kapitel Tehillim for these people. Put it on your refrigerator. You're going to be on your refrigerator many times during the day. Focus. What's the point of the day? The point of the day is to be able to understand that it's a time for davening. It's a time of dveikus. It's a time of closeness to Hashem. The greatest time for this is the time of Ruah Deruin, is the time of Mishteh Ayayin. Just like the king said to Esther, what would you like? The end 66, and I will give you. So too, the Malkos Shel Olam, God says to us during the Mishnah, what would you like? Yes, we're serving. Yes, there's craziness going on around us. Don't let us lose sight. Spend some time saying Tehillim. Spend some time davening. You know, if I were to tell you that there's $1 million, you know, all you have to do is count it and it's yours, would you say, in the middle of a party now, I can't count $1 million? Trust me, you would say, I'll let the party go on. I'm going to count $1 million. Every Kapitel Tehillim, every tefillah, you're connecting. It's the closest to God. Your tefillahs are answered, right? Kol Poshe Janotim Lo, whoever extends a hand, God responds. Whether we see the tefillah, we don't see the tefillah, the power of the tefillah is very great. There's a beautiful story, and then we'll end with one final idea that's brought down in the Sefer Tiva Moadim, where he says you may not see the answer to your tefillah right away. It's a simple story of a girl who really wanted to marry a Ben Torah, a really special boy in learning. So she started saying Tehillim every day, heartfelt Tehillim, that she should marry a Talmid Chacham. And this went on for 3 years. And she ultimately married this real tremendous Ben Torah. And one day, shortly after they were married, she casually mentioned to her new husband how she was davening for 3 years that she should marry a Talmid Chacham. And he says to her, do you remember when exactly you started? She said, yeah. She took out her diary and said this and this day. And he like turned white. He said, you should know my brain and heart was closed to learning. It was exactly at this time that something like opened up and suddenly all the learning made sense. And I was able to really, you know, fly these last 3 years. It was clear. She's saying Tehillim every day. She doesn't see a chassan on sight on the horizon. The chassan is only learning in the schus of her tefillos. We may not see this, but that's the koach of tefillah. But my friends, I'd like to add one final idea, and then we'll summarize the Mirtz Hashem. This kriros of Amalek, this coldness of Amalek that tries to keep us distant from God, rears its head in many ways in our lives. It rears its head in questions we have about God, God's existence. It rears its head in depression, where we're sad, where we feel darkness envelops us at all times, where we don't feel connected to God. These are all different manifestations of a Amalek doing his best to make us distant from God. And the Nesiva Shalom says, how do we fight aside from tefillah? But when you feel so distant, how do you move yourself to a level that you're able then to daven? How do you bring yourself to a level of closeness? The Siva Shalom offers in sources 62 through 64 two options. One is Simcha. Recognizing we read the Megillah at night and we read the Megillah during the day in 63 because in times of darkness and in times of light, we have to believe that Hashem is with us. And that's the Simcha we spoke about last week at length, to recognize that Hashem has a master plan for all of us. And the other thing that the Siva Shalom says in 64, which I think is interesting, is what helps bring us out of this level of darkness and confusion? Good friends. Having a strong social group of people who are committed and people who love you and who are interested in the best for you, that also helps tremendously lift the person up from levels of despair. And that's Mishloach Manos and Matanos Lavyonim. By giving gifts to each other, that creates these bonds of friendship and these bonds of love, which ultimately have the ability to counter Amalek and be able to bring for us this level of feeling this love and then being able to translate this love ultimately to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, my friends, what have we tried to see today in our shiur titled Purim, Pride and Prayer? The koach of Amalek is the koach of pride. We counter it through Moshe Rabbeinu, through recognizing Mordechai, Esther, the humility. We give Mishloach Manos to everybody. It's the great equalizer. We look at everybody as Banim L'Makom. That's Kabbalah Satorah. And also the Koach of Purim is the Koach of Tefillah. It's the time of Dveikus to Hashem. Mordechai is from the Reach, from the smell, which is Tefillah. It's the ability to recognize that Purim is about Dveikus. Purim is about connecting to God. Amalek, Amina, Aves try to take us away from God. But Esther is about, even in the hiddenness, find a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Our job on Purim, through the Simcha of Purim, through Mishloach Manos, through building each other up, is to recognize so clearly that the koach of Purim is in the Tanis Esther, it's the koach of Tefillah. Daven to Hashem, bring Hashem's closeness and love into our midst. Feel, that's the Simcha of how much Hashem loves us, how much Hashem wants to be close to us, that He's erasing all the boundaries, all the walls are being blown up in dynamite, and all it is this closeness where Hashem is sitting across from us at the table, ready to give us millions of dollars, ready to give us, Mashaylatech Vatayas, what are you asking for and I will give you. Let us be prepared, as Sfarim say, for things to daven for that are worthy of davening for, to have names to daven for, to have focus, so that when Purim comes, which is such a short time, we're able to utilize it to its fullness, and that we should all be benched, that our tefillahs should be answered, L'tovah.